CeeLo Productions presents Backstage Access. I'm your co-host, Scott Lowe.
And I'm your co-host.
In this podcast, we discuss all things in the world of Christian music and entertainment. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for another episode of Backstage Access. This week, we have the one and only Matt Sassano. Matt, are you still there?
Hey, man, what's going on, everybody? Greetings from Tennessee.
All right.
Awesome. Thank you so much, man, for taking time out of your day and hanging out with us.
Yeah, man, I'm excited.
Let's make it legendary, bro.
So, like we were talking before, I'm familiar with who you are and your music, but for people who haven't had a chance to, you know, check you out and to hear your music, man, what's your story?
Yeah, man. So I think largely, like, I basically have a story about being an underdog, man, and that's kind of how I hear and write my music. Music was kind of the first thing that made me feel empowered when I look back on my life. And I grew up with a lot of obstacles to overcome. I come from originally a small town called Canisew, New York, where there are more cows than people. So really isolated place, and just really not much going on there. I grew up, you know, I was born with two disabilities. I have a disability, cerebral palsy, and I have another disability called dyscalculia. And just remember, you know, throughout life, just, you know, really struggling to not feel like the misfit in the crowd, you know, and I struggled through my education. There was all sorts of just different things. And so, that was one obstacle that I had to kind of overcome, and that I saw, potential in this music thing that gave me power, to kind of tell my story. Another thing that was really unique about it was that I grew up in church. Every Sunday, every Wednesday we were there. I got to learn a lot of great things about my faith, but I also got to see kind of the dark side of hypocrisy within the church. I was raised, within that framework, but behind the scenes, there was a lot of hidden abuse and stuff like that went on. And so a lot of my life was filled with a lot of just like confliction and trying to figure out what I believed. And then that's where kind of when I was 15 years old, I got introduced to rock and music in general, really. And it really made me feel empowered, and it kind of planted the seed that this might be something I want to do in my life.
Nice.
Awesome. So,
yeah.
So you got into music, and so you said that you had grown up in the church. You were a pastor's kid, right? Your dad was a pastor?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. And yep. So,
and it was really, I don't know, I've always had a really draw towards music. Like, my mom was a piano player at the church and did a lot with the music. My current stepdad, played bass and stuff like that for the church. But around the time of my parents' divorce, my stepdad, Steve, they call him Sensei Steve. He's been on tour with us. Around the time of my mom and dad's divorce, he kind of was talking to me, and he was like, I know you've been through a lot. You have a lot to say. You've overcome so much. Why don't you just start a band and I'll manage it? And that's kind of how this whole family, ministry took place. What I mean? And I was in a variety of different bands in my little small cow town in Canisew, New York. And eventually in 2014, we all relocated to Tennessee. And in 2018, after various band breakups and restructurings, I just went and refashioned my entire journey into being a solo artist. And so it's just been a crazy ride within the last 2 years. I got to work with Josiah Prince and be on tour with Seventh Day Slumber. And so it's just been crazy how, through all that adversity and relocating and all these kinds of things, how we've been able to do what we do.
That's awesome. So
tell us about what now. Are you just a vocalist, or do you actually play instruments as well? Or tell us a little bit about that.
So initially, it wasn't even my plan to sing. Like, I never had that in the cards. It really wasn't something that I looked into doing in my first couple band projects. But as you probably will get to know, being, you know, in this music thing for long enough, that band members are fickle. So my first couple band projects that I had, I ended up, like, we would audition a singer, and then, like, a week later, they drop out. I'd audition another one, and then they drop out. So then it's kind of a unique story. I was in a church. Nobody really knew who I was. And I probably had gone there 1 week. And in the middle of the service, the person who was speaking took me up front. She's like, you know, I have a message for you. And I was all nervous and jittery and all that. And she said, God wants to let you know that he wants to use you in music. And I was all for that. I was like, oh, dude, this is going to be awesome. Like, I've been so discouraged. Like, we're going to find that singer and we're going to be off and doing our thing. And then she paused and she said, but he wants you to sing. And that's when my heart sank in my chest. I was like, you just can't even be serious. That was the furthest thing from what I ever dreamed to be doing. And about 3 weeks battling and going like, are you sure you heard God right? And like, really, I just really was dead set against it. And then like, I was just like, hey man, I might as well. And so it was funny because I started doing the singing thing. My first show, I was a nervous wreck, shaking, trembling. Like, I got myself winded so bad during the first song, I had to lay down on the stage. And eventually just kind of grew into the role. When I relocated to Tennessee, we got involved with Travis Wyrick. He put me through boot camp with singing and made me quit smoking cigarettes, which I was doing at the time. That wasn't really good for me.
Right.
And, you know, just line upon line, precept upon precept, I've just grown into this, the singer that I am now. But like I said, it's just not something that I ever dreamed that I would be doing.
Gotcha. So you said around the time of age 15 is when you really, you know, music really caught your ear, and that was, you know, when you really just kind of fell into it right there. It was something that, you know, you discovered that you wanted to do. So at that time, okay, you know, I know every musician has got that one moment where you just know, man, I want to do this. And usually there's an influence behind it. You know, there's some band that you're listening to, or one particular singer or guitar player or bass player or whatever. But tell us about, you know, who was your influence when you were 15 years old? What hit you so much where you're like, man, I want to do that? Who was your influences?
Let me just preface this. Like, I hadn't, like, my love for music started when I was 15. It wasn't until I was in my early 20s that I even embarked on my own project, because we were so wrapped up in things back in, you know, upstate New York and being a pastor's son and all the different responsibilities that go along with that. And so, but I remember distinctly how I fell in love with music. I was going to church, and there were these three Amish brothers that kind of disassociated from that religion. And when they disassociated from being Amish, they went the whole different direction.
Wow.
They had the tattoos and the piercings, and the bleached hair at the time was the big thing, and just kind of wild, rebelly kind of kids. And they came to our church, you know, because they were relocating from their old lifestyle to the new.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when they flipped me my first Tooth and Nail compilation CD. And I remember just popping that thing in, hearing a variety of just different bands from Project 86 to Blindside to, you just name it, everything on Solid State and Tooth and Nail. And that's kind of when I knew, like, wow, this is something amazing here. And, you know, through that, I also was introduced to Disciple, which I'm now working with, which is a bizarre feeling. I remember walking around my town, headphones blaring, just, you know, zoning into some Disciple music and stuff. And so, yeah, about 15 years old was when I was, you know, given that first compilation CD, and it just changed my life. And I got into all sorts of different music too. I was kind of very eclectic. I got into like that. And then on the other end, you know, really made the parents mad because I got into like Eminem and all that kind of stuff. And so there was, I was like a mixed bag of every style of music you could imagine. But rock eventually kind of won me over more.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So
it was awesome.
I wanted to ask you, because, and I'm going to ask this for the people out there who are listening, and they may be, you know, struggling with things. They may, you know, they may want to pursue, you know, a passion or a dream. And maybe they don't take those steps because they think they're not good enough or they're not talented enough. Man, and so I'm curious, you were talking about, you know, you had, you know, these disabilities, and now you are traveling all over the place singing. And so, man, what was that like? What was that, how did you overcome that, the feeling of, man, maybe you didn't feel good enough, you didn't feel qualified? What was that moment where you just, were you able to overcome that and say, you know what, despite these things that some people may label me this way, or some people may say it's a disability, I'm going to use it to glorify God, and I'm going to go out there and I'm going to sing, I'm going to play instruments. You know, walk us through that journey.
Man, well, like I said, it just, it didn't come easy. It was one of those things where it's like all those singers had dropped out of my bands, and luckily I have a very supportive, like, you know, my mom and stepfather's really supportive, and so they have kind of been really instrumental in helping me in areas where the disabilities kind of could overshadow. Like, I can't drive. And so, you know, that's just one of the many things that really poses a problem when you say you want to be a touring musician. So gratefully, I have my stepdad, Steve, who, like I said, they call him Sensei Steve on the road. And we've gone on 4 nationwide tours with Seventh Day Slumber. Wow. And he's kind of the guy that kind of helps, you know, make things happen as far as just the bookings, as far as taking the travel of, you know, doing the whole traveling thing. And like I said, I guess there's just no formula, but at the same time, like, you read in the Bible where it's like, it says, for who God calls, he equips. And I always encourage people, like, if you feel called to something, it's not always in those, it's not going to happen overnight, but like, just keep in mind that every time that you beat a fear, every time that you take a step that you were previously scared to make, they do add up. You know what I mean? And if God has called you to a certain thing, like I said, I never really thought I would sing. Like, when I first did my first concert, I was nervous. I used to have this little Helicon unit that would keep me on pitch. And make sure that I wasn't, like, you know, totally off pitch. I'd kind of sound like Lil Wayne every once in a while because the auto tune would kick in. But you know what I mean? But, yep. Like, you know, line upon line, God just kept putting people in my path and directing me in the way that I should go. Every time that I conquered one fear or one obstacle, another one would present itself, and I would conquer that, and then I would conquer that. And now, you know, we're doing amazing things with touring. We are, you know, I've got 4 consecutive number ones on Christian rock radio. We're seeing lives changed. But it all started with like a single step, and God just saying, if you overcome this challenge, I'm going to put this in your way, and you're going to overcome that challenge. A lot of people, you know, think that it's just like they see the big picture, but they don't understand that all the big picture is made up of little micro movements that were made and little challenges that God brought me through each and every time. So when you're looking to grasp onto your calling, don't think about the big picture. Think about, okay, well, in order, if I want to start a podcast, I got to do this first, and then a challenge. And then you just keep overcoming challenges little by little, and you warp into the person that God's called you to be. I remember shows where I remember this one time particularly. There was this little, before we got on tour with Seventh Day Slumber and all that, we would just play local pubs and wherever we could do anything. I never changed anything about my message. I was always the same person and all that, but we would play clubs and bars. And I remember this one time we went to this place called Ghost Bar back. It was like a local thing. And I think the promoter had forgot that he had scheduled us. And so there was no stage set up. We just had this like speaker that we had just happened to bring. And I remember there was one guy standing there, and there was another older lady in a lawn chair, just like in the parking lot. And literally I played that show like there was 30,000 people there.
Nice.
And I think at one point the lady got out of her wheelchair, her lawn chair, and just started cheering or whatever. But I was just completely crushed. But at the same time, like I said, if I hadn't conquered that fear, you know, the tours with hundreds and hundreds of people wouldn't have happened if I had not, you know, started at Ghost Bar where they forgot that I was going to play. And, you know, I had to, you know, it's like everything starts line upon line, and like I said, it's just a series of challenges that you continue to overcome, and then eventually all those things kind of add up.
So you were talking about your stepdad, who his name was Steve.
Yeah.
And you said that they called him Sensei Steve on the road, and I'm just curious, man. Yeah. What is the name behind that?
So it's really funny. We were talking about jail ministry, and our first couple tours with Seventh Day Slumber, we were on the road, and you know, we had played for probably one or two jails for this particular tour, or maybe even more than that. We did this whole circuit where there was like a lot of prison ministry involved, and as kind of an inside joke or like a funny joke, Joe from Seventh Day Slumber, every time we would get up in front of a group of inmates, would say from stage, this is our crew right here, and Matt Fasano is going to be coming up tonight, and you better watch out though, because his street name is Tiger Claw, and over there is Sensei Steve. And it was just kind of a funny little thing that he would tell the inmates, because we're obviously like the furthest thing from having any street cred. We're just you know, and so he was like, yeah, man, you better watch out for, you know, Tiger Claw and Sensei Steve. And for whatever reason, those nicknames just kind of stuck with us when Joe gave it to us. So now I, you know, every once in a while, I'll get a message from somebody on the tour being like, yo, Tiger Claw, how's Sensei Steve? And it's crazy how those nicknames kind of had taken on life of their own.
That's awesome.
That's hilarious.
Like I said, when you go, you know, you probably know this from experience, when you go into a maximum security prison, you kind of just really feel that oppression and that weight. But we've seen so many people's lives touched, and I'm hoping for 2024 that we, you know, continue doing a lot more with the prison outreaches and stuff, because that's something that's really unique and always special when we get to do it.
Right.
Yeah, those things are, I mean, those are amazing experiences. And
yeah, it's been awesome. Like, I remember this one particular story that I, you know, encountered, like, you know, after the show, somebody had come up and I had played Not My Name, which is one of my singles, and it talks about labels. And I was telling them from stage, like, you know, you may have done wrong, you may have, you know, done all these things, but like, you are not the labels that you put on yourself. Yes, you might have to kind of, you know, reap what you sow in some regard, but God, that doesn't necessarily mean that God's done with you. And I remember like this room full of like inmates, people came up to me, and there's this one guy that came up to me, put his arm around me, and he had tears in his eyes, and he was saying, man, I'm ashamed of my past, I'm ashamed what I've done, you know, I'm never getting out of here, I've killed so many people, but what you said tonight just really resonated with me. And you know, it was crazy to hear that from somebody that, you know, had done something like that, and still to see how, you know, God had reached him where he was at, just to let him know that he's not forgotten, even though he may have done all these heinous, crazy things, that, you know, there's still hope within the confines of what you've done. Sometimes it's like, you know, he'll never probably live like a regular life, but God still sees us where we're at, reaches us where we're at, and you know, continues to even call us when we think that we're at the lowest of the low, rock bottom.
Right, right.
You know, one of the things I wanted to ask, when the very first time I saw you in concert, I remember it so vividly because you had gotten up on the stage at the beginning of your set, and you had on a jacket with all of these words written all over it. Just like all of these, negative, you know, perceptions, these negative, just all these negative words. You know, like I said, this was, you know, probably 3 years ago or so. But what was the heart behind that? What was the meaning behind that jacket?
All right. So at first, I was laughing because I thought you meant, like, whenever I used to tour with Seventh Day Slumber, I used to wear this giant, like, vampire-looking jacket. It was, like, really red, and I looked like a, you know, Blade Wesley Snipes or something, which was kind of a unique style. I'm like, I've kind of changed and morphed over the time. But now that you bring up the Not My Name hoodie, yeah, man, it was just something that I really got inspired by for whatever reason. Before I was getting ready to tour with Seventh Day Slumber, we had just finished a lot of the songs off my newest EP, or, you know, the new EP at the time, In Defiance, and Not My Name was one of those songs. And really, Not My Name is all about the labels that people put on you as not only just a disabled person, but somebody who might just be a black sheep, maybe you're just unpopular, whatever it is that you deal with. And so it was funny, girl, you know, getting ready for tour, I just had this vision of this hoodie that I would wear, and on it, like you said, had, you know, all sorts of different labels and different things. And it was kind of interesting because I'm not a very crafty person, but we bought this hoodie, we got a bunch of like paint, and I think I threw my family off because I was like, all right, Mom, can you make something for me real quick? And she's like, what do you want? And I was like, all right, I want you to put loser right across the chest of this hoodie. And she's like, you're gonna do what? You know? I was like, I'll be ready for tour if you just put loser right across the chest. I want moron on my head right here. And she was just looking at me like, are you insane? And then I started explaining, kind of like, no, I got this idea. And so I took it to the first Seventh Day Slumber tour, put on that jacket, and it's kind of an illustration that, like, you know, we walk around with all these labels on us that people have slapped on us, and right, that we've even slapped upon ourselves. And we go around believing those lies and the things that, like, people say to us that stick with us your whole life. You know, right, you probably, everybody has that one thing that comes to mind. Maybe you were in school, or maybe you have a strange relationship with somebody and they called you something, and it just follows you throughout your life. And so I wanted to illustrate that the best way I could in concert. And so I just put this hoodie on, and the message behind it is, hey, man, you know, what labels have you come in here with tonight? You know, I've got mine all over this hoodie, but some of us are carrying labels that have impacted us our entire life. And that really is the crux of the whole Not My Name song.
That is so cool, man. That is really cool. What an idea, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, people were thrown off a little bit when I pitched that one. I was like,
yeah, but that's really cool.
I was like, thrown off when I saw it.
And like I said, we're coming up on some really good radio songs people are playing. Not My Name kind of was the breakout single, and it was really my most vulnerable. Like I said, before, you know, this particular band project, I never wanted to talk about my disabilities. I always set out to want to make transparent music and make songs that, you know, people could relate to, but that was the one area where I'm like, all right, I'm never going to talk about this. And that was the one thing that God was like, yeah, you are. And right, that really coincidentally was like the first breakout single, was the very thing that I really did not want to talk about, was the very thing that kind of, I hate to use the word, but like put me on the map, I guess, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, so, you know, there's so many times where we're afraid to be transparent. And, you know, and I'm not a musician. And so I could only imagine the nervousness and the difficulty that it would be to be transparent from the stage. you know, or transparent when you're writing music for, you know, that, you know, the whole world is going to hear. So I could imagine the difficulty there, but, you know, but God, you know, he remained faithful, you know, and took, you know, these struggles that you had and these things that you didn't want to talk about. And, you know, in turn put you out there, you know, to glorify him. And that has been something that has connected so many people with you, because you're not just a person on the stage putting on an act. You're not somebody who's just writing songs for, you know, solely for radio play. You're writing songs that are personal. You're writing songs that are deep. You're writing songs that are meaningful. And people hear that, and it's like, man, this is more than just, you know, a song that I can work out to, or a song that I can kind of rock my head to. It's, I mean, you're putting out music that really, really speaks volumes to people.
Yeah, man. And I like to say that, you know, hopefully in a perfect world, people can do both. Like my new single Fuel, you know, is a song that's just all about the things that, you know, it's my personal thank you letter to those people and those circumstances that kicked me while I was down. And, you know, ultimately kind of made me stronger. And some people will be like, you know, that's not like overtly biblical, or, you know, they don't hear it. But at the same time, like if you look at, like, look deeper into the song, like the scripture that kind of, you know, informed the song was, no weapon formed against me will prosper. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. so it's cool that you can write music that can be interpreted in so many different ways. I have people that are like, yeah, man, I just put Fuel on my gym playlist. I'm working out to it. And then they ask me what it's about, and I get to dig deeper into like the deeper meaning. And so it's really cool just to kind of have that in your pocket, where it's like you're creating music that not only is just fun to listen to, but has a profound meaning behind it, like you said. And that's always kind of been my goal.
Right, right. And that's extremely powerful. You know, when there's a story behind a song that's written, and that song is a great song, you know, it's powerful. You know, people just, they gravitate to it because, you know, they incorporated, you know, they could relate to it in their own life because of their struggles or their pains or their hurts. And, you know, in music, man, it's just, it's so many things on so many different levels. Therapeutic, it's just fun, it's just, you know, I mean, it's so many different things. And you know, when you write a song like you did, and you know, and people gravitate to it because, you know, it reminds them of a struggle that they've gone through, and they see that you went through it and you overcame it, and they're like, wow, you know, look at this guy, man, he you know, he's gone through pretty close the same thing I have, and look at him. He's up on stage. He's got, you know, he's on the radio. That, man, you know, and that's inspiring, man. And that needs to be done, you know, because there are a lot of, you know, there's a lot of musicians out there that struggle, and a lot of them are scared to take that next step. Some of them are just, you know, they're just like, they need to be inspired, you know, and bring out that creativity in them by, you know, watching somebody like you, you know, that does, you know, you write about, you know, your, you know, your disabilities or the struggles that you went through in life. And, you know, when you're inspiring musicians out there, man, I think it's really, really important.
This is a whole different scene, and it's just way more wide than people expect. You know, nothing against the Christian contemporary artists. I've loved, like, I got to do Rural Fest and everything, and I got to meet a couple of those guys. But like I said, I think that people are missing. And even in those atmospheres, it was funny because I was like one of the only rock bands on that festival.
Wow.
And there was, like, you know, Tasha Layton, a whole bunch of different people. And they came up to me saying, man, we, you know, we're hungry for this kind of music. And I think sometimes they just don't know that it's out there, maybe, or that where to find it, or if they even like rock and give it a chance, you know. And so when I was down there, it was cool to see, you know, in a festival full of like CCM bands, people coming up to me being like, dude, I really enjoyed what you did.
Right.
And
right.
So, yeah, it goes back to your point of like, I think people are hungry for this type of thing. And sometimes they just they don't know it. Like, right. They haven't been exposed to it.
I think that there's so many people out there, especially the younger audience, that you guys are like a breath of fresh air to them.
Right.
Like when they hear, you know, again, there's nothing wrong with like your mainstream artists. Like, you know, I love Jeremy Camp. I love Chris Tomlin. You know, I love all those guys. But, you know, I think that there's what you guys do, man. There's so many younger people out there that want what you guys have. And it's unfortunate that they haven't been exposed to your guys' music yet, because that there's still some churches that aren't on board with Christian metal or even Christian hip hop. It's like, we're going to stick to this.
Yeah. It's great to see like that pool of people kind of open up, but you're right, man. A lot of, like, if you go to my Facebook page, you know what you said about like being too Christian sometimes for the mainstream market and then being too, you know, radical for the Christian market. That is a challenge that we tend to overcome. Like when you scroll through my comments, it's either, you know, you're not Christian enough, or it's, you know, Hail Satan, you know, or whatever, like, you know, people that just come to troll the pages.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, man. I think people are hungry for this type of music. But unfortunately, some of the closed-mindedness sometimes gets in the way and all that. But I'm optimistic for the future because of people like you and, you know, all the podcasts that I've been on this month. It's just been awesome to see this lane kind of open up. I think that we're in this resurgence of, you know, I think rock and roll is going to be alive even more so in the next few years as people keep stepping up, saying interesting things, saying things that matter. Because at the end of the day, I think that's what people want to hear, you know, something that applies to them, something that speaks to their issues. I know that's the first thing that reeled me in when I got into music with people, whether it be a Christian band like Project 86 or, you know, a mainstream person like Eminem. The thing was, they were speaking to the things that I was thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's hugely important. And if us Christian bands continue to do that, I think, you know, the future of us, it's going to be really optimistic.
Yeah. I mean, you can look and see how much the genre has grown just in the last, you know, 6 years. You know, like I said, I've been listening to Christian rock, Christian hip hop for, you know, 14 years. And you can definitely see, especially in the metal scene, Christian metal, that it has grown so much in the last 6 years and maybe 5 years.
Yeah.
And it's awesome to see. And I think that that momentum is going to keep going. But I think what it is it's how you guys are so authentic and so genuine, and you're providing something new that people haven't heard before. Blood Good and Striper, they all saw that in the 80s. Mm-hmm. All that kind of seemed to die down in the 90s. And then now over the last few years, it's picked back up. And there's so many people that are now, their music is being heard everywhere. I mean, you got, you know, Andy Mineo, who, mm-hmm. his song, was the, opening song for the Indiana Pacers for a whole season. I think 2 seasons ago. It's like, there's so much being exposed and people will hear something. And like you said, it's about being relatable, so they can hear your music and you don't necessarily, you know, you don't have to be, you know, quoting scripture or, you know, sharing the gospel in every single song. You know, there's a time and a place for that, but you're being authentic, you're being genuine, and your music is helping people that are struggling with serious things. And the difference between what you're doing and what secular artists are doing, like Eminem and several others, is you guys are showing that there is hope, you know, hope found through Jesus. Absolutely. And it's not, you know, that was where I really wrestled, because secular music, it's like, you know, you listen to it and all these people can rap about or, you know, sing about what they're going through and how they're feeling, and people can relate to that. But, you know, you finish the song and it's like, man, but is that it? Like, is this what life is going to be? You know, there's no hope. There's no promise that things are going to get better. And You know, but that's what I love that you guys do, is because you guys take that rawness and those things, that those struggles, but you say, hey, there is hope, you know, there's life beyond this. And, you know, and that's what I love, that you guys provide that outlet.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And it's cool just to continue to hear stories like that, you know, yeah, like I said, I just really think that, you know, we're going to see an uptick in a bunch of these bands on an even bigger level. I mean, you were talking about, like, I think there was a Manifest song that was played during, like, Super Bowl or something like that.
Yep, yeah, there was.
And, I mean, it's opening up their world. And crossing fingers, maybe, you know, Super Bowl one day, Matt Fasano will be.
There you go. There you go, man. Yeah.
I'm open to any of the opportunities, man. And
heck yeah.
It's cool to just see this continue to spread. You know, and so, yeah, thank you guys so much for what you do.
Oh, yeah, thank you. You know, the one thing I have noticed, and, you know, Scott's right, that, you know, I think it's coming around, you know, and the younger generation is catching on. And I really seen that, you know, a month ago when we went and seen, you know, Disciple and Chaotic. And I was watching the crowd, and I could not believe the amount of young kids out there. And I never thought I would see a pit in a church. And I was like, what the heck? These guys are starting a mosh pit, you know? But it was so cool watching these kids, because they were all really young, you know, in probably, what, 13, 14, 15, somewhere around there.
I'd say mid to late teens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they were just having the time of their life. And, you know, nobody was walking out with broken noses or anything like that. They were just having fun and just gravitating to this music that you guys make. And you know, it's really cool, because you know what else I also observed was fathers, like Gen X, you know, age fathers like me. They're there with their kids. And because, you know, a lot of Gen X, man, that was when metal was really, really big, you know, across the world. And now you're seeing them there, and they're with their kids, and they're like, yeah, this is cool. You know, they're listening to metal music. They're like, you got the moms and dads on the side, and the kids are in the middle, you know, going nuts. And it's really cool where, you know, the whole family is actually able to relate to that music, you know. And
yeah,
that's what Yeah. Yep. That's what I find it cool for me, you know, is, cause like I said, you know, my background and how I grew up, you know, around certain secular music, and, but I'm able to gravitate towards this, you know, you guys and your music, and it's right up my alley, man. And it's so cool. But I honestly think, in my opinion, that it's about to break loose. You know, and your guys' exposure to the younger generation, I think you're just going to get more and more fans. And, you know, as you're out there and you're writing your music and you're touring, and, you know, it's really exciting, man.
Well, it's because you don't have to worry about content. Right. You know, anybody can go. I said, you don't, you know, when you go to these shows, you don't have, you know, these Christian shows, you don't have to worry about content. You know, you don't have to worry about, you know, taking your son along or your daughter along and hearing people drop F-bombs and, you know, and all these things. And,
completely,
you know, it's something
crowd.
That the whole family can enjoy.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, man. And I think that's, absolutely, dude. And, you know, like I said, the music is really authentic. And so the kids just really enjoy it. And, you know, when you're doing that, and there's a great environment. That's why Seventh Day Slumber has been around for so long, because they can appeal to all sorts of audiences. And hopefully, you know, everybody else is, you know, following an example and stuff like that. And it makes for a really great environment, and really the longevity of an artist as well. Because, you know, people, your parents grew up on a certain thing. They're bringing their kids, and then their kids, you know, I receive time and time again, you know, videos from parents, you know, telling me how, or like a video clip of their kids singing Dear God or one of my songs.
Wow, that's cool.
Mind blowing to see that happening. You know what I mean? Passing it down from generation to generation.
Yeah. I mean, my son's 5 years old. He just turned 5 back in September, and he's seen Seventh Day Slumber 20 times. That's you know, awesome. So his his very first Seventh Day Slumber show, he was 10 months old.
Yeah, we got to get all these kids away from Cardi B and Sam Smith and everything else, man. Right. It's time for something new to change here.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, it applies so much, and there's so much relevance. You know, but before we let you go, man, for people who are listening and, you know, they want to stay up to date on your tour, on things that you're working on, man, how can they do that? How can people follow you and stay up to date with everything you got going on?
Yeah, man. So mattsasano.com is my website. But predominantly, I am on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. So just search my name and, you know, I'll drop me a message. I'm always on trying to, you know, connect with people and stuff like that. And I will try my darndest to write everybody back. And so, yeah, check me out on Facebook, Instagram.
So is there anything that you have in the works that you're able to discuss, kind of a sneak peek on anything that you're working on?
Yeah, man. So, just recently, we've been in partnership with a 501c3 type, you know, foundation called Full Armor. And we're looking to suit up and do things in an even bigger way. We've been waiting on some of the things to get a brand new show put together with some new bells and whistles. Like, it's our desire to get like an LED wall and just like upgrade our show. Do some traveling. We've got some festivals coming up in 2024. Not a lot of them have been finalized yet. We're still in that kind of phase where it's like we're waiting to hear back, but we're looking forward to kind of traveling and doing our thing and hopefully doing it on a bigger level. We're super stoked and just couldn't be even any more excited for what's to come, man.
Awesome. Thank you for that.
And so
cool.
Thank you guys so much for holding us down.
Thank you.
Just being such an asset to what we do. We really appreciate you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Matt. And you have a good night, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, brother.
Hey, thank you guys so much. Keep rocking and have a good night.
About to hear something I never thought I would say. Thanks for your words, they were daggers and blades.